I had a chomo in my cell. He seemed like an okay dude. And then one day, just something was weird, so I kicked him out of the cell so I could read his motion discovery. I just got in his box and took it. What are you going to do? I told the guard to get him out. I need some time alone. So I went through there, and I'm reading. I'm like, oh. And I started seeing pictures, the trash and filth and all the charges. And he came back in. I remember I just knocked the living crap. Didn't even say anything to him. He just walked in. Pow. And he was crying. He didn't know what was going on. He tried to get, he said something. I didn't like it. I just slapped him. Knocked him around for a while, and I told him to pack his shit and get out.
Welcome back to the Locked In with Ian Bick podcast. On today's episode, I have fellow TikToker White George here to share how robberies landed him in prison for a lengthy stay. And of course, he's going to share all those juicy stories we all know and love about his time in prison. Thank you to everyone for all the love and support each and every episode. Remember to follow me on Instagram at Ian_Bick to stay up to date on any news and upcoming events related to the show. Remember to get your official Locked In merch at ianbick.com and use code Locked In to get 20% off your order. And also, if you guys could hit that follow button, that subscribe button, that like button, if you're listening on YouTube, does us wonders to getting the show out to more people. And don't forget to leave us a review on Spotify or Apple. Now, without further ado, sit back, relax, and get ready to lock in with White George. GW, Mac Daddy. In the building. Dude, it's a pleasure to have you. Shout out to Michael Springer for connecting us.
Yeah, Springer, something else, man.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He had me here for like 3.5 hours. And when I was like, dude, we're out of memory, he's like, but I'm not done.
He can talk.
He can talk. And I'm glad he was able to tell his story, and it's out there now for the world to see. And it was really good. He's got an incredible story, and he's doing some really good stuff for the world.
He doesn't realize the power of his story. He's not comfortable telling it, you know, so he doesn't think people care. I watched the whole thing twice and like.
Oh, you watched the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
He did a great job. He told it like there wasn't, he didn't get lost. Like he had it in a row. And sometimes people, they come and they talk and they think that they missed stuff or they screwed up, but they did a good job. So it came out good. But I'm excited for your story, especially the prison aspect. You already given me some teasers in there. Tell the crowd where you came from today, and you drove here too.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Arkansas, like 5,000 people, no air conditioning in the school my whole life. Good friends. I mean, normal upbringing. Dad's a truck driver, Vietnam vet. Mom stayed at home. Yeah, I had a tumultuous childhood like everybody, but I knew right from wrong. Went to college, studied biology and chemistry. Thought I wanted to be a doctor or something. I was wrong.
Wait, you studied biology?
And chemistry, yeah.
So isn't that funny that there's actually someone with your name that is a biologist and you went to study biology?
Well, I was a bodybuilder forever, so anatomy and physiology, kinesiology was always just my thing I was obsessed with.
In high school, you were a bodybuilder?
Yeah, in college, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was 290 pounds yoked.
You had a whole different life back then.
Oh, yeah. I was an athlete, owned my own moving company, very successful, sold it, jumped into the mortgage business in Texas. Mm-hmm. Just, I don't know what I wanted to do. But everything I've done well, including crime. And, you know, life goes on, and I got this big scar on my arm. I got an infection, and they gave me a bunch of hydrocodone, and that started a 10-year downward spiral.
Just right from that cut?
Yeah.
What was the cut from?
I got a splinter in the tip of my finger, and then there was bacteria that gave me cellulitis, and I almost lost my arm. They had to go in and remove chunks of my arm out.
Because of a splinter?
Splinter had bacteria on it.
So you're telling me you never would have went to jail if it wasn't for that splinter?
Mm-mm. No, I never thought about it that way, but no.
That's why I think of things, and that's crazy. It's a domino effect.
It turns on that. You know, but looking back is that it took me out of my head. I could cope better when I was on pills. And I got up to 70, 75 hydrocodone a day. That's a $10,000 a month habit. You got to feed it somewhere. And I was able to feed it for years, and then I couldn't. You know, the whole 2008 recession, everything fell. So I got the clever idea that I would take jewelry from people who didn't know I was taking it.
So you completed college, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So you got through all of that.
Got through all college. Yeah, I was a straight A-list kid. I don't drink. I bounced in bars.
And then you had the bodybuilding.
Yeah, I did that all through into high school till I was 35, I think. That was the biggest I ever got, like 315 with abs.
Is there money in bodybuilding?
No.
So why do people do it?
Ego, insecurity, and the fact that I was really, really big and strong, powerlifting and stuff. So I was usually stronger than everybody in the gym most places I went. And so that just, I love the war against yourself. I love going in there and I'm competing against me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
When I put 500 on the squat bar, and would I do 10 or 12 reps today or 15? What could I push? And I just get off on that.
You know, back then, there was no TikTok, no social media. It's a whole new world where you're able to monetize that. Like a guy like you, if you were big like that and doing it now, you make some good coin.
Yeah, you would. But, you know, I thought about as a birthday present to myself someday, getting ripped up again and see about master's class over 50. But after this walk, I'm going to be pretty lean. That's a great weight loss program.
Yeah, well, to tell people what you're doing the walk about too.
I'm going to walk across America from New York to California. It's about 3,000 miles, takes 6 months, 20 miles a day, and I'm doing it in support of historically black colleges and universities and reading literacy, two things that I feel that people don't pay enough respect or attention to. And plus, I'll lose weight. I'll be skinny. I'll look like you when I'm done.
So how does that exactly does that work, though, the walk part? Are there rules to it? Are you allowed to stay in – do you stay in hotels? Or?
Some people camp. I'm too old, and plus, if I try to take a crap in the woods, I'm crap all over my ankles. I have short legs, so that ain't going to work. I will take my pickup literally, and I'll move it 20 miles. I'll get an e-bike, chain it up, and after I get to my place, I'll get on it, ride back to my truck, and just leapfrog. But I have some people want to come along. I'm working on an RV and somebody to go along with me for filming. But all that will come as I start.
That's cool. You got to tell me when you're in a certain state. Maybe I come out there and say hello. That would be awesome.
My whole premise is walk a mile in my shoes while I walk a mile in yours. Let's walk and talk. Tell me about what's going on. Just a basic human level. You know, in prison, like you connect with some people you never would have. They want to be heard. And I just thought it's a chance just to meet the most interesting people I can.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And it's that time alone to be introspective. And I have a lot of PTSD from prison and other things, and I think it's a good way to heal.
So do you have it all mapped out, like which states you're going to and how that works?
Generally, but I know I'll have events to go to along the way, so I have to geo-track, mark my place, make sure I come back exactly to that place because I can't skip a step. I'm going to get all of it correctly, but it'll start in New York and just a straight line to California.
And this is going to be the weather matches up with everything.
Yeah, you want to start on the east in the spring and head towards California in the fall before the winter hits because you got to walk across the mountains.
How long do you think it'll take?
6 months.
6 months to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Yeah, I'm excited to hear about it. You got to check in.
Oh, I will. I'm coming across New York, so you can come meet and walk a mile when I come through there.
Okay. And you're going to walk to New York City or just the state?
I don't know exactly what part yet. I thought about coming through New York City. Mm-hmm. Just for fun.
6 months. Wow. That is so cool. Has anyone done this before?
Yeah, more people have climbed Mount Everest in a year than have total have ever walked across America.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I know of two people that have done it recently. A lot of people do it like short sections, north to south, but I'm going east to west.
Incredible.
It's how the idea came about, though. You spent 6 months in the hole, right?
Yeah.
Isolation.
Yeah.
I spent about 4 weeks when you go to diagnostics because they just didn't have bed space. And I started losing my mind. You know, I just started detached from reality and I started dreaming of things. And I would imagine outside smells, sights. And then I'd start walking the streets I knew and then I started making them up and houses and I made imaginary conversations with people. And this was a way that kind of saved my mentality. But when stuff got hard in prison, I'd withdraw to that thought, not knowing I'd ever do it. But it's just been on my mind for years. And then I met a pair of twins that were walking across. I just randomly met them at Walmart. And 2 days later, I found a documentary about a guy who wheelchaired across America. So named Gabriel Corderas. Gabe, shout out to you. And I was like, I got to do this. I don't know why. I have to.
And that's all because of the splinter.
Yeah. Yeah, I never thought about it that way.
I always think of like cause and effect, you know, like what caused a certain thing. Like we're here today because I randomly met Michael Springer in Arkansas because he happened to be my driver to the county jail and he ended up having an incredible story. I went there to interview people not knowing that he had an incredible story and that's how we linked and that's how he texted me. And he's so polite. He's like, hey, man, can I give this guy your number? I'm like, Michael, you give whoever, man. I don't care.
But it's funny, before y'all got there, I reached out to him. I said, like, my friend Danny's coming. I don't know JD personally, but I was like, JD Delay's coming, et cetera.
I got to connect you guys. You guys, yeah.
JD, I think, funny as hell. That dude's got you could hang a coat on his nipples.
Yeah, he really could.
I'm like, dude.
And he's going to love the Chobo stories. You two would hit it off.
Oh,
Are you going to pass through
Oregon?
Yeah.
No.
You're not going to do every state?
No, I'm going straight line, man. Okay. That's far enough.
You don't pass Oregon to get out there?
Oregon's up here. I'm going.
I'm not good with my geography.
I'm going to like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, because I just moved out of Fort Wayne. So I want to walk back through and see all the people I know. And just I'll go like Kansas across the plains, and I'll hit Colorado, the bottom, and then I'll get over to California, across the Sierra Madre Mountains.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But Springer.
He a great guy. Really nice. Just, man, anyone that hasn't seen it, they have to watch the Michael Springer episode.
He'll get in your feelings about that, the military.
Yeah, definitely.
We talked about it when we were locked up together, and I knew it wasn't full of shit, you know, the way he talked. I know enough veterans, and he didn't brag. You know, it was almost like low-key, just you could tell it's a weight on him. And I understood why he did what he did, why he never wanted to be in his head, because I knew that same feeling. Absolutely. I just picked a different drug.
So when you got the splinter and you had the surgery, how old were you?
It was 2001, so 23 years ago, 29, 30.
So the first 30 years of your life were... Not a complaint.
No drugs, nothing.
Mm-mm. Nothing.
Nothing.
But talk about a midlife crisis.
Yeah. I got hooked on them opiates, and, you know, I just liked the feeling because I didn't have to be me.
So how much did you lose in between? Like, you had a career, you had things going on. How quickly does that, like, when addiction takes over, how quickly does it go from 100 to zero?
I managed it for a really long time. Nobody knew except the people I got the pills from. And like she told me, she could have bought a house or two with what I bought in pills from her for all those years because I had a consistent supply. But it was at the very end, that last 2 years probably, when the economy changed, my job, because I'd always made great money, it just went downhill. And I got desperate because I didn't detox and scared me. And I just had a bright idea one day. I saw a chance to slip in and get some jewelry somewhere, and they never knew. And gold was like an all-time. When I got arrested, the day before I got arrested, gold hit an all-time high. I knew gold. I could take a loop when I'm looking at jewelry. I knew exactly I could weigh it. I knew exactly how much I'm going to get for it. My jeweler that I sold it to was impressed at how well I knew gold now.
There wasn't like precautions in place though when you sold that jewelry?
Cash for jewelry?
Mm-mm. Nothing. So they're not checking it?
No.
So what place do you hit? Where do you see this jewelry?
Okay.
Give us the whole rundown, beginning, middle, end.
I'm convicted of this. I never really talk about it. It's I would look for houses for sale, okay? And then I could take my iPad and look, and owned a moving company, so I knew house layouts really well. And I would look at my iPad, and I could take a tour of the house. I could find the jewelry chest online. If they had one, if the house is vacant, I knew whether to hit it. And I would get their lot boxes. They hang on the door to get keys for realtors. I'd just get the box, get the key. I'd walk up in a shirt and tie, and then pull up your driveway in the middle of the day. Walk right in your house. And I never cleaned people out because I had a morality issue with this. Don't laugh. I didn't want anybody to feel like they'd been violated. You know, that was the thing I had. I quit talking to God. I mean, it's just, and because I wouldn't want anybody to do that to me. So I thought if I take pieces, they wouldn't notice. It may take them forever. They don't know who to blame. Maybe their husband or wife has an addiction or their kid, you know, so they would never suspect anything because I didn't know them. Unfortunately, that created victims. You know, I have victims in the world now because of it. Like, you know, you did. And that's the worst part. But I'd go in, get just a few things. I was not greedy, never greedy. That was the key. And I did it over and over. And, you know, we got addicted to the rush of it more than just being able to buy pills.
Now, how much are you getting from a haul at one time?
My best, I think, was a bag of gold teeth.
Teeth?
Yeah.
That someone just had randomly?
Yeah, like it might be a... they do funerals, right? They get the gold fillings out. It was a bag, and I remember looking at it. I run the magnet over it. Didn't react, so it's gold. Got home, tested it. It was 20, 22, and 24 karat gold. I think it was like 18 grand for 4 minutes of work.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that was...
I can't imagine a big guy like you in the suit, like the nice clothes, walking in casually in this house.
Pull up in the suburban in the middle of the driveway like I belong there.
And there was no close calls or anything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there was a couple.
But, give us a close call.
Well, the one I actually got arrested for, I have rules. I would never go into somebody's house under $100,000 because they worked really hard usually to afford that, and I felt bad. I didn't usually go houses over $350,000 because they're often self-employed or stay-at-home wife. So I had rules, and I only went from like 10 to 2 and take an hour for lunch just in case somebody comes home. Those are my hours. But I had this plan, and it just kept me safe. But I went to a neighborhood I knew better than to go to. I'd gotten a little desperate, and I remember knocking on the door over and over and over, gotten the key, and as I was about to put the key in the door, somebody opened it and goes, "Can I help you?" And I acted like I was there to meet the realtor because that's what people assumed. And Anyway, I tried to play it off, and about 2 weeks later, cops come with a warrant because they noticed the lockbox was missing, and then just everything unraveled from there.
How did they tie it to you?
I think my ex-girlfriend talked because she was kind of part of it a little bit. She definitely knew she benefited, but they started looking. I mean, they tore my place apart, running serial numbers. I had nothing stolen, but I had lockboxes.
You kept all the lockboxes?
I thrown them in the river, and I hadn't got a chance to throw them away, so they were like, what the hell? So, you know, I knew the jig was up, but they didn't give me my motion discovery until I took my time, so I didn't know what they had on me.
Is that legal?
No.
Oh, it's because you copped out to a plea deal?
Yeah, but they still wouldn't give it to me until the day I took my plea. 6 months, they had it and couldn't get it.
But if you had pressed to go to trial, though, they would have had to give it to
theft,
you.
I would have got theft by receiving probably instead of residential burglary, in my opinion or an attorney's opinion, but it is what it is. It needed to happen.
How much money do you think you got overall from this?
Mm-mm.
You didn't get
I'll never say.
You'll never say?
Mm-mm.
Well, $18,000 on one hit.
It's
six figures.
I will not say I'm still on parole. Nope.
Holy cow.
I mean, it was, you know, they knew. I mean, the cops, I fooled them for a while because they didn't know what was going on. But when they figured it out, then it started unraveling pretty quick. Like, yeah. It just, and I knew I was going to plead. I knew I wouldn't go to trial. I was guilty as hell.
The day they showed up at your house, did was it like a whole big scene?
Four officers, two from Little Rock, two in the town I lived in, at my door. And I didn't have a peephole. And I opened the door, and they're like, you step outside. I'm like, crap. So I pulled the door behind me, and they were going to get a warrant. And I'm like, well, come on in, because I knew I didn't have anything. But then I had the lock boxes, and they arrested me. And then they started dropping felony after felony after felony, like pages of felonies. I think my bond was started at $250,000. It went up, got reduced to $250,000. And, you know, some other officers that came in to interrogate me, who I wouldn't talk to anybody, but they told me, it's like, don't bond out. If you do, they're just going to drop another charge on you.
And then pull you. Yep. I've heard of that happening down in those areas. And then they raise it and you lose that initial money.
Yep. And there was a U.S. Marshal I went to high school with. They'd had this huge drug bust called Operation Delta Blues. Cops were helping guys run cocaine and all this stuff across town. Like, it was all over the state. Brought in 70-something guys. It was a big Fed operation. And I saw her and was talking to her. She's like, don't bond out. Because I was all over the news. Hell, I was on the news when they sentenced me.
Isn't that crazy that they could do that?
I mean, what are you going to do?
It's just not, I mean, it's just fucked. And they have the authority and you can't fight back and you can't do anything.
I waited out and made peace with it because of what I did to people. Like, I kind of had this coming. So if I get screwed, it's part of the game. Chalk it up.
So when you got locked up, you never got back out, like on a bond or a bail, you just sat there.
County jail for 370 something days I sat for.
So that's your first time ever in prison.
I've got arrested for crap and bonded right out of just petty stuff years ago. But yeah, that was my first time to being taken to the back in jail and deloused and yeah, the works.
What was that like for you mentally?
39 years old. I don't know if I was frightened. I just was so scared of the uncertainty. And I remember this little guard, this little black man looked at me, grabbed my arm and said, hey, big man, this too shall pass. And I remember looking at him like I felt peace at that moment because he could see my anxiety. I didn't know. I mean, I'm too old for games. I'm a big boy. You know, I'm not into going to fight people because I'm going to try to hurt you. I just want to avoid all that. And I had to figure out who to become in prison. You know, like, you can't be a hard ass. I mean, you're just asking for trouble. So I kind of went being an OG, an old timer. At 39, you know, and just kind of, I'm well-read, I speak well, so people gravitated me for legal advice, and I had a different experience a lot because I went in so much older like that.
Did you have support from your family?
No, God, no. I haven't talked to my mom in 13 years.
13 years?
Yeah, they disowned me.
Because of this case?
Yeah, that and a few other things that she was unhappy about with me, but yeah, this was my dad died 2 months before I got arrested, and so he never knew. He would have visited me. He would have loved to have seen the inside of the prisons he's always told me about.
Yeah, I'm not visiting you. I want to see the prison.
My dad, he would sit there and go, what'd they do? That would have been my dad. But I never got to grieve his passing either. Because, you know, you're numb for a while, then you get locked up and you don't show emotion in there. So that was hard. That was really probably the most challenging thing. Plus, I drug my dad's name through the mud because we had the same name. I'm a junior. And that killed me. I wish it was a marine biologist, but it's not.
You could rock with it, get the photos changed or something.
But you know, I'd been there just a little while and some friends of mine came and put like $135 on my books in county, which you know is because you're starving, right? And then my best friend who I hadn't talked to yet, didn't even know if he knew, $300 a month started coming every month. USA Today, local newspapers. He asked some friends, what do I send them? And he just hooked me up, and that made that changed everything for me.
Wow, he took care of you the whole time, and
both times I was in.
Wow, that's
shout incredible. Out to you, Dave. Yeah, we've been best friends since we were five.
That's a good guy right there, because you would see a lot of your guys in your age in prison that wouldn't really have anyone because they're the provider of their family. Their family loses everything from whatever that put them in jail, and they don't have anyone. They have to work and stuff.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, I had a lot of people write me letters because I just thought everybody hated me. I didn't know what people's perception of me was. Sorry.
That's your ringtone? That's incredible.
That's the guy I want you to get on there, Loki.
What is his name?
Loki, hold on. Can I answer this?
Yeah, just answer the phone.
Hey, Loki, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I hear you.
All right, hey, I'm on the podcast with Ian right now. Yeah, just to do it to you. I'll call you back, buddy. Bye.
That ringtone is amazing.
Phenomena.
Holy cow. I didn't even know they still make the custom ringtones nowadays.
I had to fight it years ago. It's on my background of Facebook, the animals from the Muppets. I love Phenomena.
Dude, I love your energy. I guess it keeps you young, right?
Yeah, I'm 52. Something's got to.
Yeah, it keeps you young.
You've been through the ringer, you know, you learn to have a different zest for, I feel like I have the philosophy of a 12-year-old boy. Everything's just wide open and new, and you spend a year in county, you don't see grass hardly, you don't see sun, you know, so those are sunsets, sunrises. I stop every time I see one and just remember to appreciate it.
Because when you were in the county, did you think that this is what prison's going to be like? Because that's what my experience was going to a holdover, because I had no idea. I have nothing to compare it to.
Okay, I was going to ask you this too. You know now, there's no way we could describe prison to a free world person. There's no way that you can have context or understand until you've been there, correct?
Yeah.
And I had friends trying to help me understand what I was about to face. My mind still couldn't wrap around it, but it helped. But they kept telling me prison was better than county. And so I'm like, God, I hope so, because county was horrific for a year. I won't tell you, when I first got there, you'll love this. I just got my first commissary. I got a bag of coffee. And this old timer, he's been done 19 calendars, got out and already back in jail 6 months later. 6'6", 130-pound black guy. Asked me for a shot of coffee. We called him Slim. So I gave him a spoon of coffee. He's like, that's it? Get the fuck out of my cell. He hauled off and bitch slapped me. And I'm like, and I remember going, did he just pow? Here comes a second slap. And he knocked my glasses off my face. And I remember I put all 320 pounds to try to punch him in the chest, to crack his chest plate. And I hit him in the solar plexus. He just folded up, went back out over a table. The goon squad came because he cut my nose with my glasses. They pressed charges. Like, no, I just don't want to see him again. And I didn't. But yeah, I got bitch slapped twice.
Holy fuck.
A week into county, you know? And I'm just like, did he really just, is he that crazy?
He bitch slapped you twice. Yeah,
because I couldn't even react. I'm like, did he, pow. My cell, he looked at me, he was like, you just got bitch slapped twice. So yeah, I didn't catch a lot of grief over it.
When you look back on it now, do you realize that if you didn't hit him back, it would have been a lot harder for you in there?
I'd have probably had to fight a few more times, yeah.
Yeah, but once you hit him back, no one, I'm sure, messed with you.
No, that, and I also learned, like, working out. You know, we'd tussle and wrestle and stuff, and we had a guard who would give us 60 seconds to catch the corner, to duke it out if we don't need pepper spray us, because he loved pepper spraying people. But he liked watching the fights, right? Murphy, he was actually a cool dude. And so we'd work our problems out there, but we'd roughhouse, and I played football. I mean, you know, and people started to realize that I'm physically stronger than just about everybody in my block. So I knew to play games to show without having to fight. Arm wrestle, things like that. I played a game where if you put your hands in mine, both your hands, I could take one hand and put you on the ground, because I could squeeze and just crush your hands, and people... Things like that kept me out of trouble.
You know, it's so funny that we both got the glasses slapped off our face.
It's a great story.
Holy cow. That story is, oh man, I think that's going to go fucking wild. Oh, I got to have, you got to try one of these, the Magic Mind energy shots that I gave you. This is your first time ever trying this, right?
I haven't had an energy drink in probably 10 years of any kind. So is this going to really jack me up?
Yeah, no, these things are great. So I stopped drinking regular energy drinks, and now I switched to coffee and I switched to Magic Mind, and doesn't leave you with a hangover, doesn't leave you with like a crash. Like when I was drinking energy drinks, I would drink it, a few hours later, you're crashed out. Now I'll do like my coffee in the morning, do one of these during the day, and I'm fine. Like no headaches, nothing. Like it's great. They're served best cold. You keep it in the refrigerator. I just buy these like once a month, and it actually enhances your productivity too.
Like focus?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see. You're going to see firsthand. I'll ask you again at the end of the episode.
Bottoms up.
Yeah, bottoms up. You shoot this thing down, and it tastes good too.
Yeah, that's actually not bad. That's not bad at all.
It's the best cold. You have to drink it cold. I'm seeing these pop up in a lot of gas stations. But yeah, I mean, you got to use Magic Mind. It's really good. And they hooked me up with like this promo code, which is really cool for like listeners and stuff that I'm going to plug in the description. That says on the bottle, boost energy and focus, crush procrastination for those procrastinators out there, and elevate mental clarity. So let's see how clear your mind gets by the end of this.
I talk fast. Let's see if it speeds up.
Awesome. Yeah. Shout out to Magic Mind for hooking those up for us.
Thank you, Magic Mind. Let's see if that works, because at least as much as I drive and travel, I will tell you, I had a chomo in my cell. His name's Richard Martinez. I'm throwing him under the bus because I can't stand the dude.
This is in county jail.
This is in county jail. He was actually in Indiana. I guess he had moved away to Indiana, but his girlfriend had some young kids. She worked at Walmart. He was giving them Benadryl to knock him out, and then he was taking pictures molesting him. Well, one of the girls, I guess, found out that he was doing it and told her mom. Mom didn't know what to do, told a Walmart clerk, you know, manager there. They called the police. He had ran to Indiana, brought him down here. You know, I didn't know all this at first, right? He seemed like an okay dude. And then one day, something was weird, so I kicked him out of the cell so I could read his motion discovery. I just got in his box and took it. What are you going to do? I told the guard to get him out. I need some time alone. So I went through there, and I'm reading. I'm like, oh, and I started seeing pictures. The trash and filth and all the charges. And he came back in. I remember I just knocked the living crap. Didn't even say anything to him. He just walked in. Pow. And he was crying. He didn't know what was going on. He said something. I didn't like it. I just slapped him. Knocked him around for a while. And I told him, pack his shit and get out. And he came out. I mean, he was kind of puffed up a little bit. And the guard asked me. And I said, you know, he's here for molesting children. He just gave me a fist bump. So I was alone for a week. That was wonderful. Didn't go the hole. Then he went down to another cell, and I told that guy, a big black guy, I was like, you know what he's in for? He tore that dude up, tore him up, and then came out and stood on the chairs and was telling everybody what he did, put him on blast. This guy wouldn't roll out of the barracks. Would not. He would just sit by himself on TV. Nobody talked to him. So and we kept telling him, we're going to hurt him. If you get found guilty, we're going to hurt you, because you don't go to prison right away, right? He kept saying, no, the trial got put off. Then one morning, he's in that little holding room. He's about to go to prison. So we all knew them, but we couldn't get a hold of him. But friends did eventually.
Well, that's such an interesting dynamic that it was in the county, because a lot of times people don't know their paperwork or anything, which is why he would have his paperwork to begin with, because he's fighting his case. And you guys are kind of in the mindset of, is he guilty of it? Is he not guilty of it? Because you probably would have felt bad if he was found not guilty, right?
No. You knew when you read it and you met him, you know child molesters.
And there was no chance of being found.
No. He was too wormy, too story didn't add up. And when I read, it was so horrendous that just there's no way it wasn't. And then I never felt bad. I mean,
why do you think the prison system's putting him in your cell?
Nowhere else to put him in county.
Really?
I mean, they came in. I mean, they had some kid that was coming out of the hole. He's 18 and they wanted me to scare him. They wanted me to be naked peeing in the toilet when he came in. Like, Bubba, you know, I'm going to, you know, just. And I was like, I'm not getting naked, but I'll scare the kid a little bit. Annoying little shit.
You know, they stuck me with all the chomos.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah. Every single, if there was, I don't think I ever had a cellmate in the shoe or the hole that wasn't a chomo. Isn't that crazy? And I can't do anything about it. And a lot in the hole, you don't get paperwork on anyone. I would find out after the fact.
Do you know how we got paper? We didn't get it in county. You had to get their motion discovery. But in prison, we put in a mail call for their timesheet that has their charges. And as soon as the sergeant comes in, how mail, somebody'd stand right behind the sergeant. He'd go, Smith. And he'd go, right here. Just pick it out of his hand. And then he'd put him on blast right then.
Holy shit.
In here for two counts of rape, a minor, blah, blah, blah. Just straight up, that guy's going to pack his stuff.
I heard in like federal prisons now, they're not even letting people have the paperwork or letting people know what they're in for or anything like that.
You got to call on the outside there, don't you?
Yeah, well, with cell phones and everything. It's so easy to find. Which is, looking back on it, it's crazy that I had a hard time. Because knowing how many cell phones are in that prison now, like, come on, you couldn't even fucking Googled it. It was a public case. And these people are trying to extort me and thinking I'm a chomo. Like, that's just fucked up, you know?
That's a rough ride, Ian.
I know. They did me dirty, man.
I've watched when you're talking about it, I just can't fathom. Because you know, when I got to Cummins Prison, that's the granddaddy. I lived about 30 yards from the execution chamber. So every day we go to chow. Oh, yeah. It's his death chamber, D.C. on the door.
Holy shit.
But in Springer, every time we go to chow, we're walking right by the room where they execute people. And there's a problem. 2,000 men there, and there's hundreds of chomos. So the thing is, they stick together. You can't whoop all of them. I mean, they'll shut the prison down. But I saw some shady stuff going on. One guy caught with over 400 pictures of children, not naked, like family pictures and all this. I don't know where he got them, cutting them out of magazines. They arrested him for it, took him to disciplinary court. Judge found him not guilty because she doesn't know that he was using those pictures for masturbatory purposes. The sergeants were pissed off. We were pissed off. I mean, he had to change barracks. I mean, we got him out quick, but they're protected.
Yeah.
The state Prison Rape Elimination Act. If you hurt a chomo and they can prove your intent was because of the charge, you can get a federal hate crime.
Yeah, J.D. DeLay was put out some content on this recently about saying how crazy the statistics are that you could do a variety of things in prison, but if you hurt a chomo, they're a protected class of individuals. Mm-hmm. But other things can happen. Extortion's fine. All of these things are fine. But you hurt one of them or anything, it's a whole federal charge.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
You find other ways to torture them. I mean, you cut them off. I mean, you don't let them have good jobs. They all worked in the garment factory because they made clothes and all that. So if you got assigned to the garment factory and you weren't a chomo, you were in hell. That was like, it was an easy job, but that's the worst place to be.
All right. So here's an interesting question mm-hmm. for you, right? As someone that was like heavily involved with like, you know, being a part of that and like you beat up a chomo before and you're open about that. How do you feel for the parents?
Of the kid?
No, the parents of the chomo. Because I ask this because I do have some parents that listen that have reached out because they want me to have a perspective of a chomo on the show and this and that. I don't know. I kind of feel for the parents, not because of their kid, but just because of what the kid.
The stigma.
Yeah, the stigma and also that they have to deal with that. Like they didn't approve of that. They just got stuck with it, you know?
Guilt by association.
Yeah.
You know, I believe they're hardwired sexually that way. I just honestly believe they come out of the womb. That's what they like. But the fact they act on it, that's where I'll draw the line. And now, I mean, I've known parents dads who said they put their own kid in the ground over that.
Really?
No dads who, I mean, I've read about dads who shot their own kid. Mm-hmm. You know, if you hurt other kids, I don't want my kid doing that. I'd turn them in. You can't fix them. There's a guy named John Adams. Again, I'm putting him out there because I can't stand him. And I remember I was in prison, and I hadn't been there that long, and I already knew what his charges was. He had touched a boy, sexually molested him. So how many others has he touched, right? And he had a five-year sentence, but he couldn't find a halfway house. He had no family to parole out to. So he did most of his bid, went home, and while I'm in prison, I remember he came by my cell door and said, "Hey, I'm leaving." I slapped him because he put his head in my cell, and I just, you know, go home. And that's the ending I left. It wasn't 8 months later. He's back in because he touched another kid.
Wow.
Yeah, somebody else got him.
What was your nickname? What did they call you?
What did they call? My last name, Sedbury.
Sedbury?
Yeah, it was just, that's all
you
they.
You didn't have a cool nickname?
I never had a cool one. Couldn't be Mac Daddy in prison. That would work.
Why? No one would have fucked with you. You're a big guy.
Nobody just ever call me one just by my name.
Can you tell the audience about the phone call with Mac Daddy thing? I looked you – plug your TikTok, by the way, too, how this came about.
All right. I went by TikTok. I created Mac Daddy Life, which, by the way, I started doing physics videos, science videos on TikTok. I was taking Coke bottles and butane and making them disappear. It went viral. And I told one story one time about the guy that came up with Jet and Ebony magazine. That went viral, and that's how I kept going. But I've always joked Mac Daddy. That's my name forever. It's on my caller ID on my phone through AT&T, Amazon, everything. I get mail to Mac Daddy.
Tell the dentist or the doctor story?
Oh, yeah. When I go to the doctor, right, I'll call in to make an appointment, and they'll be like, Mr. Daddy? Because they'll say either Daddy, comma, Mac, and I'm like, this is Daddy. Yes, sir. How can I help you, ma'am? And you go in to the doctor, and they're like, oh, my God, you're Mac Daddy. I don't know. It took me years to figure this out.
You look like a Mac Daddy. You know what I could see you driving?
What?
There's movies where there's always like the actor, the big jack guy that has a monster truck and it says something outrageous and he's dressed in like a purple jumpsuit or something. If I ever make it big, I'm buying you a monster truck and it's going to say Mac Daddy.
In a purple sequin jumpsuit.
Exactly. Oh, man.
People on TikTok, I'll meet him in person. Hey, Mac Daddy.
That's why, you know, it works for JD. You have the look. You have the look. You know, that's why you've gained a following. It's looks and personality. That's what I attribute my success to on social media. I have this look about me and I have this personality.
You're non-threatening.
I'm non-threatening, but I went to prison. So it's just like, he went to prison and then you throw in the McLovin stuff and this, I don't know, it's great. And like this dynamic, it's cool, you know, it's just, it's fun.
But you know what, because we're ex-cons though, we're making something of ourselves different because I honestly believe ex-cons are created for a permanent blue-collar class. Like most of us will never rise above that just low-paying jobs, you know, we're stuck. And that's what, 3 million people that are ex-cons in this country? That's a heck of a workforce. And it's very hard, as you know, to break past that. So, yeah, I think that, like I said, you're non-threatening, but the juxtaposed against what you did, your crime was very intelligent, you're very aggressive, you know? Can't believe you went and gambled to pay off your debts.
I had to do what I had to do, man. That's my mentality. And when that's put into a, like when I'm not under pressure and like all my decisions were made because I was under pressure. And I always thought like this person needed to get this money on this day, but there's always a next day. So had I just waited and figured out another alternative and knew it wasn't going to be the end of the world and I didn't need to move mountains, everything would have been fine. Cause now, and it's just so much different now. Like I'm hustling on my own. I'm doing it in a healthy way though. Like I'm still the same person in that regard that I was back then 13 years ago. But I got this, I got that hustler ambition personality, but now it's driven to something different, you know, like I'm editing videos, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. That's the grind.
I think you were going to succeed no matter what you did though. To be honest with you, whatever you picked, I think you have that hardwired in your brain. You're going to find a way to succeed. You just picked the wrong area. I mean, you did, but I don't think you understand the mechanics of it well enough. Mm-hmm. Now you have a much better idea. I think you're going to be successful, whatever you try. Well,
thank you. And you know what's funny on that topic is you said you watched the HBO documentary. And recently I've been connecting with one of the producers from the HBO doc and who's done stuff for Netflix, big shows. And he just moved the town over. And he came, we connected, and we've been hanging out here at the studio. I've been showing him stuff. And he's like, because he was the initial person that interviewed me for HBO to get my story in. And he's just like so amazed at what's been able to been created from going to prison. And I was on a call today with these individuals that are doing like this reentry fair. And they're like, oh, what hiring people should we have? Like what jobs hire felons, this and that? And I'm like, well, let's move past that mindset and think we should be creating entrepreneurs out of these individuals. Let's move past that mindset of they got to work, like you were saying, of those specific jobs. Let's bring it to the next level. Let's make 3 million content creators. Let's push out these, you know, influencers with the tits and the ass and this and that, you know, and then let's bring some entertainment value to it.
Get rid of the lip syncers.
Yeah, let's do something fun, you know?
Ex-con mafia. That's our collective. Ex-con mafia, right? They can't come after all of us.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Word on the street.
Yeah, but I think that's the way the world needs to go to. Take the power away from the people that say you can't be anything after you go to prison.
Why are there no ex-cons that ever sit in consultation or on the Bureau of Prisons? Now, think about it. And they're going to say, well, because you're an ex-con, but none of these old white dudes and women have any idea what it's like to be inside that gate. How can they possibly? I'm going to give you a good one. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. His name is Gregory Hall. I was locked up with him. He spent 3 years in the hole because he would not cut his hair or his beard. He's a white guy. He's Muslim. Refused. They did everything they could to try to break him. And he went through he appealed this, went to the federal courts, appellate courts. Took a handwritten motion to the Supreme Court. They accepted it. They get a 3,000 every year, and they only accept about 80 or 100. They took his first time a handwritten on legal yellow paper. It was accepted with a flex pen. Like, this is a big deal. He got a 9-0 decision against the state of Arkansas to let us grow our hair out and our beards past a half an inch or have beards at all because of religious faith. Got the entire United States Supreme Court shut the state of Arkansas down. They weren't happy about it either. Not happy. Now, they had beards, but they made it hard on us. But I was locked up with him, and he had about $4,000 in copier fees, so he could never have money on his books. But his lawyer sent him magazines, and that was his currency. But he's probably one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. We talked about Christianity versus Muslim faith because he led all the Muslims in prison as a white guy. Like, if you weren't praying 5 times a day, he was on you. You know, and dude, super cool dude. I don't know. I'll never forget the guy. And I'm sitting there looking at the transcript from the United States Supreme Court. And just reading, you know, his signed version with all the original signatures, like, you'll never see this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he probably taught me more about sticking up for what you believe in you know, and he grew up Christian. He lived in Pakistan for 6 years. Like, this is just the most random person ever. But they gave him life plus 40 for attempted murder because he kept suing the county jail when he was in there and winning. So he threw the book at him. He said he messed up. He shouldn't have sued the county.
Holy shit. I've heard stories like that before.
He went to trial. Yeah, life plus 40.
Did you see the 60 Minutes doc about the federal prison? It just came out. The clips are circulating on TikTok. But, you know, to counter what you were saying about they're not letting inmates sit. Like, states allow a lot of former incarcerated into the prisons and whatnot. The feds don't really do that.
You can't go back in to speak or anything?
You might be able to, but they're not, like, pushing it. As like, state prisons, you see, like, Jelly Roll, for example, speaking. It's going viral. You don't see that in the federal prisons.
I'm surprised they don't. The feds, I think, would be more lenient about that because they're more progressive, in my opinion, than state, but
I feel like states are trying to do more to battle incarceration and addiction than the feds are.
Well, yeah, but think about it. They let fentanyl come in all the time. They're worried about TikTok possibly stealing our data. Yeah. Because you're on TikTok, and it kind of is annoying, right? You know, Facebook's been fined almost $10 billion worldwide. They've been fined $25 million for election tampering in Washington State, and that's the largest fine ever for that. Good luck finding that on Facebook, by the way.
Yeah.
It's all public record. They donate tens of millions in every political cycle. TikTok takes 90 minutes of eyeballs away from mainstream media, Facebook, and Instagram. So think about it. They want them gone. TikTok hadn't really done anything. It's just supposed. But it's okay for China to send fentanyl.
Well, that's what I love about that senator that's like getting canceled on TikTok. Did you see that?
Which one?
Some senator in some state. It was like exposed that he took money, I think, from donors or whatever to vote for the bill. And everyone on TikTok's just lighting him up. He lost like a few hundred thousand followers.
It isn't Tom Cotton, is it?
No, it wasn't Tom Cotton. It was this other guy. I think it's Kennedy was his last. I don't know who it is, but I've been seeing it on TikTok. It's just crazy. But serves them right. You know, how are you going to vote to ban TikTok?
Like, when half the country's using it?
Yeah, and it's doing so well for the economy. And I think it's so hypocritical that you have Biden on it. Using it to campaign on, he said he'll sign a bill to take it down.
Why can they send us random text messages from politicians? They can spam us legally from politicians, but we can't, you know, like,
yeah.
It's not a fight I can win. I can bitch about it, but it irritates me.
What are you going to do, right?
I had an idea, though, to get into prison. It's something I want to do.
Yeah.
It's called Convicted Cuisine. A pair of handcuffs open, make two C's, right?
Yeah.
You have, like, I don't know, Chevy Chase come into the prison to judge four model inmate spreads, give them all $30 on commissary, and they all make their best spread and have somebody in there to actually judge it, tell the backstory of each inmate so the viewer can kind of get attached to a story, root for somebody. I don't know, give them 150 on their books, $200 for first place, but it's a positive thing to do, showing prison in a different way. I just don't know how to pull it off.
Did you see that commissary cook-off thing we used to
do? Yeah, I've been saying this for years. I just want to say that I did not get it from that.
No, that's totally fine because that's not my passion. You know, the videos are up there. It's fun. We had talked to some big producers about getting that, you know, something, and the people are like, well, it'll be too complicated to get into prisons and have that and the liability. But I was like, this doesn't have anything to do with going into the prisons. But we actually, with Michael Springer, filmed inside the Lone Oak County Jail, the cooking stuff.
Were they in pink jumpsuits in Lone Oak when you were there?
I don't know if it was pink. Maybe the girl, I forgot.
Lone Oak was notorious for pink forever.
Maybe it's pink, I don't know. Were you in Lone Oak?
Hell no.
Never there. It's tough over there. Sheriff's a great guy, Sheriff Staley.
You know, he's been to prison.
Sheriff Staley's been to
prison. Look at him, I'm pretty sure Staley's the one. Yeah, I think he got it reversed. Mark Hampton's attorney, I used to work out with Mark years ago, but yeah, he got it. He and his wife, I guess it got overturned. Yeah, it was Sheriff. Pretty sure it was Jay Staley. If not, I apologize, Sheriff Staley. But yeah, that's the one I thought.
He's actually a good guy, though. They got a good thing going on over there.
I'm glad.
So how much time do you end up getting? And you got sentenced in
13 years in prison.
In county jail, you got that sentence.
Yeah, I was in 6 months when I got my time. And I should have been out in about 2 months. They lost my paperwork. And I had to call my attorney after 3 months. It took another 3. So I sat there for that whole year. And then they split my time front and back. So I didn't even get full credit for sitting there.
So they send you to this, is it called a maximum security prison?
I went to Diagnostics first, which is a medium max. And then I went to Newport, which is a medium max. That's where I did it. Then I went to work release my first time around. And that was a godsend. Work release gave me some money to get out. I got to work out in the world. That was a very positive program, but it's hard to get into.
And how long did it take you to get into that program?
Several months. As soon as I got there, after I got my 60 days in a host squad, then I immediately applied for it and probably 3-4 months, but this is bad. I wrote a letter to the guy that's over programs because they have a 6-month and 9-month snitch camp program. You have to snitch to graduate. If you fart in Deuce, you got to report somebody. You have to write somebody up twice a week. And you have to stand in front of the group family. I apologize for my infraction. And I didn't want to go to this because I couldn't go to work release. So I wrote the most heartfelt letter I can that at 40, you know, I'm going to be just screwed if I do this. I need to earn a living. And he acquiesced and gave me a 6-week in-program substance abuse thing. But when people found out that I got that overturned because I was high risk for it, everybody started asking me to write letters. I didn't get a single other person overturned. But one dude who gave me so many problems working in laundry with me, he asked me to because he couldn't read or write. And I hated him so bad that I wrote the nastiest letter to this executive I could, calling him everything under the sun. I said, John, you want to read it? No, no, it's good. It went a week later. That dude was gone.
Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah. You don't feel bad about doing that?
Mm-mm.
Was he a piece of shit?
No.
Okay.
The coolest guard I had, Miss Shanika Nickelberry, shout out to you. I love her. She follows me on media.
What's her name, Nickelberry?
Shanika Nickelberry.
Shanika.
She's beautiful, like black and Cherokee Indian, real tall. And I did laundry. She was my boss. And she was just, we would talk. She treated me like a human, you know. And this other guy was constantly trying to get me in trouble. If I worked nights, he thought I had it too easy. So I swapped to days. They found out nights is harder. It never ended. He's an old crackhead. He's not all there. And I got tired of it. I got tired of the bullshit. So I just, I wrote a letter for him. He paid me $10.
Was that like a hustle that you were doing all these letters for people?
Most of the time I did it for free, especially if guys couldn't read or write. I did legal work to help them or figure stuff out. My hustle was Scrabble.
Scrabble?
Yeah, I ran a store, but Scrabble.
Tell us about the Scrabble hustle.
I think I paid $10 to get a Scrabble game out of the gym to keep in my box. And every day I would set up from 3 to 7 at a table, take on all comers $1 a play and lose.
You would lose?
No, I didn't lose. No. That guy's had the whole entire Scrabble dictionary memorized but couldn't play defense. You know, I'd get cocky sometimes and almost get beat, but I just played it every day.
What do you mean $1 a play?
It cost you $1 to play me. If you lost,
the whole match.
It's a bet, yeah.
And so what happens if they get the $1 if you lose?
Yeah, I never got $1.
But a Scrabble game could go on for hours. You're not making much money.
No, but it's fun. I might play $5 or $6 a day.
Okay.
And it's just for fun. I mean, I had money on my books. I did a store. I didn't eat sweets in prison hardly. I think I had 92 Icy Whites when I left.
What's an Icy White?
Honey bun.
You had 92
of
them?
Yeah, I had rented other box space out. And I fed people. But that was just my hustle. I'm a business guy. And in county, I did the same thing. And I usually pay. I never really had anybody not paying except once in county, ran up a debt on me, go get my money. He went it again. So, you know, now it's 3-for-1 instead of 2-for-1 because he went past the week and he got his money slipped. So I'm like, okay, we're cool. Here's my list of what I want. Store came, he caught out.
Meaning
like,
he went
out of the barracks. He caught out and said he was feeling threatened. So they rolled him out to a different barracks. And I told the Sarge, I was like, this ain't cool, man, at all. He goes, you know, what do you want to do? And I was like, I need my money. You're a piece of his ass. And he goes, you got anybody? And I asked what block he was in, and I knew a guy there. And I said, yeah, tell him I need a favor. Yeah, he got his pound of flesh.
Wait, the guards were just fine with it?
This dude was cool. I've broken fights. I've, you know, helped de-escalate some situations. So I had, a different level of respect. And this guy was a bodybuilder, too. So we talked the same language, and he was cool.
So are you, like, running with a group of people, a group of individuals?
Yeah, I mean, I have a core group of friends. And the longer you were there— it's not a shot collar like JD was, but it's by seniority. You would move up in the tables where you sat until you got to the top, the main spot. And because, you know, I'd sell a cigarette for 4 cookies. I'd buy a roll of thing, have my celly roll, 10 cigarettes for him, the rest I'd just sell. And so 4 cookies for a cigarette, sometimes I'd have 30 or 40 cookies on my tray. They would just come pay their debt to me at the table. And I'd tell my buddies in my car right there, eat up. They're like, well, dude, let me get some. Nope. It's business. There's their friends. That's why they're getting to eat all the cookies.
So what do you think it is like the psychology behind how you're able to maneuver? Because a lot of people go to prison and can't reach that level of hierarchy. What do you think it is for you, besides the looks? Because that's obviously a part of it.
Experience. Just life experience. I had my own business, you know, educated. And I looked at prison as a game or jail as a game, you know, a dangerous game. But I figured out how to navigate without causing ripple effect. And I was a nice guy. I tried to be pleasant. I mean, if you needed something, I could help you. I would, unless you try to take advantage of me. I just shut you down or cut you off. And I don't know, people start to build a respect and they would come to me for like a counselor, you know, like they got problems or could you help me read my motion discovery type thing? I don't know. I just found that was my natural groove.
So what terminology would you use? And JD doesn't even like the word shot caller. We just all label him that. And he would never call himself a shot caller. But if you were running the prison, though.
No, the prison. No. Don't mistake that.
Just the unit?
Just in jail, it was my barracks. I was in there, that same barracks, for 9 months.
So you were running the barracks.
People come in, but yeah, things would kind of go through me. Okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, everybody has their own thing, but ultimately, if there's stuff jumping off, I could kind of quiet it down. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't want to make any assumptions that I was somebody. I wasn't. It's just the way I moved.
Yeah.
I think I earned people's respect, both the guards and inmates, and that allowed me to get by easier.
I think people are just fascinated with the survival aspect, how some people are able to do that and others, the majority, are not, and how someone escalates to that, because you're a new guy on the block. So was it just luck and timing that you were able to kind of slide in?
I stumbled around a little bit to kind of figure out my way. I had to learn the rules, you know. I had to learn to take my leg out of my pants when I'm taking a dump.
Wait, you know, what do you mean leg out of the pants?
Don't ever have both your feet in your pants when
Why
you're taking
is that?
A dump.
I've never heard of this before.
You ever got jumped on the toilet and you can't run or get up and fight because your feet, your pants are down?
So you had to have one leg out.
To this day, I don't take a shit with both feet in my pants.
Holy cow. Mm-mm. I never thought of that.
Yeah, because in open barracks, man, there's four guys sitting there. Somebody run up and clock you. What okay. are you going
to
do?
So you go to the mall, you have shoes on, you're taking off your shoes?
I'm taking one shoe in my pants. Yeah. Just
no, are you actually?
Yeah, I still do. I don't sit to pee.
I know that. That's common. Everyone says like that sitting to pee. That's what I learned in prison. My cellmate made me sit to pee or kneel. I was just like, fuck it. At this point, I'll just sit. I'm not fucking kneeling.
I never had to do that. That was never an issue.
Because you were the boss of your own cell.
No, but I had some pretty heavy, you know, in prison, I had some pretty heavyweight guy, you know, cellies that, but that wasn't a thing. We always wiped. It's just what we did. But I never had to sit. But yeah, I pull one foot out. I still take 3 and 4 minute showers. I can take a shower so fast because of prison.
Yeah, that water, the push ones. I was always so mad when I'd end up in a prison with the fucking push buttons. Those things are the worst. And then when I finally found a real faucet at like some of the older prisons, those are great. Nice hot shower. But the push ones, that water is never getting hot.
Well, when I got to work release, they had shower curtains, individual showers, and I was in heaven. Like, wow, you know, that was, but it's, I had open showers I just did not like. I mean, that was, I was never scared. It's just an uncomfortable feeling.
I would never do an open shower. I would just wait till everyone's done, and then I would go at the before they called count time or before they lock you in at the detention centers. If we're locked in at 9, I'd go 8:55, shower by myself in my boxers. No fucking way is Bubba coming up to me. You dropped that soap, boy.
And it's funny. I never had that. The only time I've ever been hit on by a dude was cutting my hair. And I won't let a guy cut my hair anymore.
Wait, you got hit on by a dude in prison?
He was trying to rub up against me.
And what'd you do?
Elbowed him in the nuts.
So how does this go down?
I got kind of a screwy haircut, though.
He's cutting your hair?
Yeah, he's cutting my hair, and you feel him trying to rub up on you. And I'm like, you know, like, dude, a couple of times I was trying to get through the haircut, and ended up, he turned around, I just popped him right there, and he was, you know, bent over. And I'm like, I don't know what happened. And I ended up getting the clippers and just finished shaving it just to get done with it. But I would not let that dude touch me. And, yeah, I just that was not cool to me.
I still can't believe they didn't give you a nickname.
If they did, I didn't know about it. Ask Springer. He still calls me Sedbury.
So to tell us about, because there's a lot of listeners that I'm sure watch the Springer show or listen. When did you guys meet?
2015.
In the prison, though.
Yeah, in the South Hall at Cummins Prison. Yeah.
How was that interaction?
I hit it off with him right away. We had another friend named Shang that I hung out with that I met in prison, too. And then they knew each other from the streets. Here's the thing. The whole time I was in prison and county jail, I never encountered a single soul that I knew from the streets, like, and for the world. Anybody I met would have been prison-wise, but I hadn't yet to ever meet anybody in prison or jail that I knew in the world. That's just not the crowd I hung with.
Yeah.
So it was weird. I was at work release, and I hear some guy calling my name, my GW, what I go by. Nobody called me that. I'm like, freak me out. It's been years, right? Come up as a guy I graduated high school with. Since first grade, we went to school together. He just church ministry, and they happened to be at work release, and he heard I was there. And he was up in the barracks screaming for me. I'm like, Danny, what, you know, the only time.
And describe work release. Like, how much freedom do you have? What's that like?
I will say this too. Prison sucks, but Arkansas is not as horrible. I didn't have that bad of experience with administration. That hasn't been that bad. Work release is a very strict place. But I remember we left prison. We're all shackled and chained, right? And they drive us to the work release center, unhook us, and go wait right here at the door. And we're going to go get coffee. They went around behind the building to get coffee, and I'm looking at the road. You know, I'm looking at city streets and no fences, nothing. And we're staying there unshackled. But we'd just been shackled for the whole van ride. And I'm like, wow, food was better. Oh, my God. You spent, I think, 60 or 90 days doing whatever institutional job there before you could get a real job. You had to be on a list, but it was very strict. Your shoes, I remember Sarge kicking my rack in the middle of the night because my bunkmate hadn't got his shoes straight. One was crooked. Like, he's at work, get up and fix it. So it's just that kind of stuff that just, but like, you were treated better. You have vending machines. You could spend $35 a week cash at the vending machines. No pennies. Pennies will get you sent back to prison. Oh, that you get caught with pennies, you're gone. Because there's no reason you'd have pennies. Because it's vending machine change. So, but the freedom of jobs, a lot of guys went back to prison because they couldn't handle that freedom. Cell phones or tobacco, they had to dip, or stealing, calling their girl on a company phone there. I mean, it was a good thing if you just worked it right.
And you ended up getting kicked back to prison.
I got out, went home, and then got in trouble again, and got a revocation. I went back for another 10 months.
Did you get arrested for the similar crime?
Yeah, and that time I was going in on open houses, acting like I was interested in the house.
Wait, why would you do the same thing over again?
I still had addiction issues. I went back to it, yeah.
That 1 year in jail didn't kick it?
No, the 2 years total then, no. I got out, and I wanted to see how my tolerance was. And, I went down that road again.
Maybe you're too smart for your own good just to think about that aspect, you know? Like, your mind was like, because that's something I would do. I'd be like, I want to just give it a shot and see where this leads.
Now I won't touch it. I've had dental work. I refuse pain medicine because I know I could, but I'm afraid one was too much and it would just, so I won't do it.
So now you were going to open houses, just getting.
I was going to open houses, looking around like I'm interested. I'd make conversations, you know, because when I got caught, they would tell, like, we acted like his name was Chris or Michael and had a wife with kids. Yeah, I just came up with this whole story and kind of sociopathic a little bit. And I would go in and just pull a piece or two and then, you know, making money. It didn't go on very long. They caught on quick. What happened, though, that was so bad is right when I got arrested, there was a realtor. Because remember, I'm acting like I'm a realtor. There was a woman that an ex-con, actually somebody that had gotten out, kidnapped her and brutally murdered her just to get her money and ATM cards. And it wasn't until he did something on her cell phone, updated to the cloud, the cops could find him. And so that I got lumped in with all that negative press because it's real estate, houses for sale, and a realtor got. So they were extra hard on me because just the timing of it. 13 years for my first time in trouble for residential burglary.
So you didn't go back. You didn't get another charge. You just had to complete more of the sentence?
No, I had a couple more, but they still revoed me, which would be 6 months. And they put a couple of charges on, and I ended up doing 10 total on it.
Just 10 months?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And that was a part of the 13 years?
No, that was run concurrently. So okay. They gave me 13 years. And in Arkansas, nonviolent, you do 2 months on a year, 1/6. So 13 years would be 26 months. And I did right at 24. I got an early kick out. Went back, got the revocation, and then they gave me 8 with 4 suspended, you know, which would be 8 months, 2 months on a year. And that worked out to be about 10 months total before I got kicked out because I sat in county for 2 months.
It's crazy that how each state is so very different. Like on a 13-year, it sounds bad getting 13 years, but you're only doing a couple of years.
Prison math.
But then at the other end of it, would you rather do the time in prison and be free and clear, or would you rather be out and abide by the rules?
Get out and abide by the rules. I'm okay with parole. That's your freedom. You learn how to manage your life better and to exist in society with that leash on you. I understand why it's effective. If you let parole work like it's supposed to, you're okay. Yeah. I don't really have a problem with it.
You know, the feds abolished parole in like the 90s or the 80s.
I thought you still could have a little bit of a tail.
You get 80, you serve 85%. And I think with Trump's new policies that he enacted before he left, it's a little bit more. You get a little extra time off for programming. But you're serving the majority of your sentence.
I've got a buddy who's about to go to federal prison right now for embezzling and stuff. I never saw that coming. And good dude, but he's waiting to get sentenced. The other day was his deal, but they pushed it back again. He's been waiting for 6 months to get his time. But I want to say they told him he's going to do 40% or 50% of the Fed time. That's what his...
How much time is he getting?
Not very much. He might do...
Well, if he's getting a year and a day, he's probably only going to do like 50%.
Yeah, it'll be less than 3 years. I think 18 to 24, 18 to 30 months.
Yeah, he's going to do at least 50%. So the way they, what I've learned is when lawyers tell you that, so say you get 18 months, right? The lawyer will count 6 months halfway house time and then your good time on top of that. And the halfway house time, they'll put you on an ankle monitor or just dial in or whatever. So there's like loopholes for that. But like if you got a 20-year sentence, you're not going to out after 10 years.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. No. It's funny that when I remember when they gave me 8 with 4 suspended, my public defender, She's like, oh, God, they're going to send you to a program, you know, that snitch camp. I'm like, no, they're not. She's like, what do you mean? I said, they're never going to take me. I've been in prison for my revocation, right, waiting on this. They'll take you from the streets into that program. They will not take you because of politics coming from a unit into that. So I was like, I'm going home in September. I already knew my, and sure enough, September 3rd, I was released.
So when you went back in, do you have the same hierarchy?
First time, I worked every program I could. I tried to be the best inmate I could, you know, just work it, and it really didn't help. So the second time I went in and said, fuck it. And
I'm taking over, baby.
No, I didn't. I sat back. I had my Scrabble hustle again, and I sat with a bunch of old-timers doing life, and that was the smartest thing I've ever done. They taught me how to read human nature. I could see, and you probably know this, I could see a guy on his rack with his box open. And he would look, and I'm looking around to see who's noticing. Like, I could probably pick out the person that's probably going to make the hit before they even see the boxes open, right? So I'm watching, like, bam, I know it's going to be him. And when he sees that box, I've already found who his homeboy is that he's going to look at, right? So I've already seen the whole play before it happens. And these old-timers taught me how to watch human nature. It's so predictable because that's what they do all the time. And they would get youngsters and try to set them on a straight path, and I just really gravitated to those guys. And so I tried to be helpful, but yeah, I wouldn't take in programs. I wouldn't do anything I didn't have to.
No, you said you were close to the execution chamber. Did you ever see guys walking to that?
Or? No. They hadn't fried anybody in a while or
shot them. Oh, it was just vacant.
They keep it there and clean, though, just in case.
It's clean and ready to go?
Yeah, constantly.
Could you see into it?
No.
Through the glass?
Oh. I've seen pictures online, obviously, in the news.
Is it eerie walking past that door?
It's a little weird. Yeah, just every day you kind of notice it doesn't get more normalized. You're like, people die there.
Have you been reading those articles that people actually want to bring back the firing squad or they could choose how they want to be executed in certain states?
I think that's fair.
Yeah. It's weird to think about.
How would you choose?
How would I choose? Probably lethal injection if it was done right. Quick and painless. I wouldn't want to be hung. I don't know how hanging would work. Is that instant?
Yeah, if they break your neck, but if they got the science down right, you can either tear your head off or it not, you'll just suffocate. There's different.
The guillotine.
I'd probably take a bullet in the chest.
In the chest?
30 caliber. Yeah, right in the heart.
You think that'll instantly? What if the guy misses and it's off by a little bit?
From my understanding, say there's four guys firing or five, only one or two have live rounds, and they don't know who has the live rounds, so no one has to live with the consequences of it.
Oh, that's how they do it?
Yeah, you didn't know that? They don't just one person. They'll have multiples up there. Some are firing blanks, some are firing live rounds. You just don't know which.
But they're all feeling the guiltiness of the conscience, though, right?
Yeah, but they all can tell themselves that they didn't do it. Oh. It's psychological for them. I mean, who would want that job?
Wouldn't you want a headshot, though, or no?
I got a big chest. I feel more confident they'll hit me in this chest than my head.
Yeah, but then you read those stories about the lethal injection cases where the person, suffers, and that's no way to go out either.
Yeah, strapped down, I don't want that.
But I'm also never going to do anything to get to that point where it's going to happen.
It's morbid we think about it, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. And just hearing stories and what people do and how crazy people are. It just, you know.
When you were there, did you feel real evil around some people? You could just, it emanates from them?
Some people are evil. You could tell, they're just, there's evil people. The guys walking around with shanks and trying to extort people. And then you have the guys that try to be evil, but they got a big heart. They got to present themselves a certain way. And those are the guys I adapted to because they did some bad shit on the outside. You know, they robbed people. They did this. They shot people, whatever. But inside they got a good heart and they were just brought up a certain way or they were in that environment and that shaped, you know, what they did. But then there's the guys that are literally just pure black heart, stone cold evil.
Sociopaths and psychopaths.
Yeah, the guys that were trying to fuck with me and stuff, those are just some evil dudes. There's no reason with individuals like that.
I don't, you know, you bring that up. I met a lot of dudes that were in for some violent crimes that I was end up being really close with. A good friend of mine is actually getting out in 2 years. I think he's done 18 years. He broke two dudes' necks. He's 6'10", 350, though. He's a big dude. Somebody robbed him, and it just, anyway, went south. And so he got 88 years, and he'll do 18 or 20 on it. And just the gentlest guy. When I found out my grandmother died, the chaplain never told me, even though my uncle's calling the prison over and over to let me know because they were going to try to get me out to go to the funeral. You know, you can go be escorted, which I'm glad I did. And I don't want to go grandma's funeral like that. And he wouldn't tell me, but he didn't tell a lot of people their family members had died. It was a control thing. And that really got me. And he kept everybody away from me that night to kind of let me sort it out. And then I remember I got called. in front of the whole executive committee of the prison. I'm standing there. There's like 30 people staring at me. I'm in this box, right? Apparently, somebody in my family had wrote a letter to the warden, thought that I should serve all 13 years in prison, like day for day. What family member does that? Because the warden even goes, my 30 years of doing this, I've never got a letter from a family member like this. And she goes, how does that make you feel? You know, that question, I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to feel. Like, just, you know, your mind is just, and I got out of that situation. I go back to the barracks and he saw my face. He's like, what's wrong? And I told him, and he told everybody, just get out of the corner of the barracks. I'm on my rack. Don't nobody come touch me. Don't come anywhere near your rack till lights out. He kept, because that's the day things can go really south. You know, I'm hurt and I'm in a really foul place. And if shit would have popped off, I mean, it would have cost me, you know? So again, a violent guy who just had a big tender heart. So I knew a lot of those guys. Usually murderers were the people I hung with. Because
you say that so casually. Well,
I mean, when Big B gets out, I'll help him get a job. I'll help him do anything. I'd invite him to your grandmother's house for lunch, and she'd love him. He's just a really nice dude.
I know. You meet a lot of – I mean, there's been people that have been convicted of murder or attempted murder that come on the show here. And, you know, it's the same thing. They're good-hearted people. And a lot of the times the people that have died in their cases were a part of that life too. You know, like, I don't know the specifics, but they were involved in gang violence or they were doing something that was like a collateral as a part of that world.
Game, yeah, it's part of the chalk it up to the game, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, prison taught me to value human life more. Like, I see somebody homeless on the street. I was locked up with a lot of homeless people in county, right? I got to talk to them, hear their stories. And it changed my view on how I look at people. Like, you know an ex-con from a mile away. You'll meet them and I don't care what it is, as long as it ain't a sex crime or you hurt a woman, like, dude, we're cool. You know what I mean? Because we're in part of that brotherhood, of that fraternity. And if society won't give them respect, I will. You know, they did their time. They got out. They must have figured it out or paid their debt. But we're judged so harshly in most cases, which in a way gives us a weapon. When you come out of prison, did you feel unencumbered? You know what I mean? Like, you'd already done all this. Everything been stripped away from you, your name, your credibility, your money. You really didn't have anything on you anymore.
And they still make it worse. Like, it's just, it never ends. Literally from the day you get arrested. Actually, honestly, but it's like the day you first find out you're under investigation, because that's when the stress starts, that first day. Get arrested. It's not innocent until proven guilty. Mm-mm. You are guilty the second you're arrested, all the way through. Throughout everything, and you're still guilty. I didn't feel relief until I got off probation. So I got arrested in 2015. I got off probation 2022. So that was 7 years of my life, every single day with that hanging over me.
I still have it now, though.
Yeah, and even still for the couple years after, it wasn't until I got this, what I do now, that I'm fully good, because now I don't need to ever have that feeling of having to walk into a job and knowing that they could reject me because of my felony.
Do you know how I got around that? The only job that's ever turned me down is Amazon.
Really?
It said they need. I was right at the 5 years away, been out, but I was still on parole. But I went in for interviews, and I'm a convicted felon. They're like, really? And I have 10 felonies, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, you know, I don't know. I said, let me ask you something. Why didn't the judge give me a life sentence? He's like, well, I don't know. I go, so why are you? And they kind of take a step back, and that kind of, for some reason, turns the gears, and they kind of look at it differently. Because they're holding me to a standard that's not even applied by law. And that's how usually I'll back people off.
Yeah.
But I'm always open. I don't lie about the application.
Yeah. I worked for Amazon too, from Whole Foods.
See, you got lucky and got to work there. I couldn't.
Yeah. Because I think it's weird, like with their background check, it's like federal. They only run for like sex offender cases, I think. State, it's different. I don't know. Who cares? I'm so happy I just don't have to be in that position. And I want to inspire people to never have to feel like that. By carving their own path, and fuck these other restaurants and people that won't give someone a shot. And I guarantee you, you hire someone that's been to prison that actually genuinely wants to turn their life around, they're going to work harder than any single other person out there.
I've had three jobs where the head person there said they love felons. He said he goes, sometimes it's a crapshoot, but when you get a good one, he goes, they're the best workers I've got.
Yeah.
And I will say this, black guys are some of the best salesmen I've ever seen. Like, if they would just apply, you know, find it something different to sell, because I've seen them work on a woman for a year to get in her britches, a guard. And then they'll get there. They just are so persistent, you know? I mean, I just look, I'm like, why aren't you selling mortgages or cars? You would make a killing because you're such a good salesman.
I know. So what did you end up getting into when you got out of prison?
I got my CDL. It's the best thing I ever did.
I've heard a lot about that from guys that got out.
My work release was for a truck and trailer repair company and sales company. So I got to drive vehicles on the property for the job, which is weird to drive, you know, when you get out. And they helped me get my CDL. So as soon as I got done, I went and took the test, and then I've still got it. I've got every endorsement, hazmat, so I have a clean record, you know, driving record. So I'm the gold standard when it comes to CDLs because I can get in anything legally. And I wish more prisons would set that up to get inmates, you know, see they got hope when they get out. They can get a good job.
And you can work for yourself with a CDL too, couldn't you?
Yeah, but you go work for somebody that you're making, I don't know, starting off $800,000 a week, but you don't have home costs. If you're over the road, you're living in their truck. You know, you can stack money up for a year or two that way.
And you see those trucks driving on the road that are looking, they pay even more. Like I've seen ads like $2,000 a week or this or that because they're looking for guys. And it's a good, if you're getting out and you're single, do that all day.
I went to the oil field after a while in New Mexico and Texas.
Really?
And when Biden got elected, turned the whole thing upside down, then found a job in Indiana and came up there. But, you know, if you work hard, it'd be six figures.
But, you know, like what you said about me is like that I was destined to figure something out. The same goes to you. You know, like you're always going to figure it out. Anyone that's a hard worker in America and is determined, they're going to figure it out. And I think this is like it's a great thing. Like, so something I think about is like I've seen homeless people on the street, and you have homeless people and then you have people that like ask for money. It is so easy to make something in America. Just like, I'm not saying millions, that's obviously not easy, but just to walk into a place and in a world where everyone's looking for someone to work or whatever, to get a job, just to at least provide for yourself. I respect that more, the person that's trying than the person that's just asking for something.
You know, looking back, I agree with you, but if everybody thought that way, we wouldn't have the opportunities we have. You know exactly how stressful and hard it is to be a content creator and build this and go on your own. Mm-hmm. It is a tremendous amount of pressure, is it not?
Yeah.
And I can see why so many people give up, because I feel it now, and you just got to keep pushing through it. But if everybody thought the way you just said, we wouldn't have opportunity. It would all be taken up.
But not even being an entrepreneur, though. I'm just saying it does take a certain person to do this.
You're talking about just in general with
I'm
jobs?
Saying in general, yeah. Like not just to go in off the street and like you could go to any store and they're going to hire you. Like any store, everyone's – even since COVID, like so many people are looking for employees.
But I know so many people say they can't find jobs, and I don't know why that is.
Yeah, what do you think that's actually accurate? They're not trying enough?
Not trying. People have gotten comfortable with less.
They're picky?
Yeah, they're not willing to do what it takes. You know that. It's – opportunities there everywhere, but some people don't know how to recognize the opportunity, don't know what to do with in front of them. I mean, I see it all the time talking to people, and I'm like, there's nothing you can't do.
Yeah.
Literally, but some people can't see that or don't want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, when I was on pretrial after getting found guilty but awaiting sentencing, I tried to apply for a job, and I applied to 100 places. Not one of them would hire me.
Because you're pretrial?
Yeah, because they saw the news in the paper. I went to Red Lobster. Couldn't get a job as a dishwasher. Fuck a dishwasher. Guy said, come back when you resolve your issues. A dishwasher. It was $9. This is 2016. $9 an hour. Fuck you, Red Lobster. In Danbury, Connecticut, Red Lobster.
If it wasn't for the cheese and biscuits, I wouldn't have to
You could get
them.
Those in the frozen aisle now and then Stop and Shop. But isn't that sad? Like, you're going to say I couldn't get a job as a dishwasher. I'm not sitting here on my high horse saying that, like, I wanted to be the GM or something. I was just a kid that needed a job to, you know, to make some money.
They didn't need to hire people that bad
either. Motherfuckers. I'd never go to that restaurant, Danbury.
Well, I'm not going to Red Lobster either, yeah, ever. So, Cat and G's for me.
But that's the problem, you know, with it's these places like this that are so anti, you know.
What, the Taco Bell Hut, you know, the Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, KFC, or whatever you call them. I knew some people that applied. The manager wanted them, but because that felony showed up in the background check, they would not take them under. That's just their rule for it. Even though the manager knew they would be good, but there's nothing they could do to get around it. And I learned a lot of jobs tell you they run background checks. They don't, because they cost money. So I tell a lot of inmates, lie. Just lie. And if it comes up, you weren't going to get the job anyway. At least you made a couple of weeks of paychecks. Move on.
Yeah, you're not getting arrested over it unless it's like a federal job, which you're not going to get anyways. But
But yeah, you do what you got
to
do.
And also lie about experience, because in this day and age, you just have to have the knowledge to, like, to figure it out. Like, if you want to go work at a restaurant, say you're the best damn chef and learn as you go, you know, and work your way up to get in the door.
Confidence, being able to sell yourself, and you can figure it out. I mean,
when I was a manager at Whole Foods, people would say, I don't really have experience. I would take them anyways, because you could teach them. You give them that experience. In a world where it's so hard to hire, screw it. You know, they're looking for a job. I'm going to take them. I'm not going to turn away anyone. I'll figure it out. There's always a purpose.
Oh, if somebody's teachable, I agree. But somebody not long ago asked about how do you go find jobs that you want these days. I don't think I've ever went and looked at a wanted ad. I look for companies I want to work for. I remember when I sold radio in Dallas, I was trying to get a big client, and I found a prosthetic arm at a thrift store. And I sent it to him in a box and said, I'd give my right arm to work with you. And they were so blown away by this prosthetic arm. I got the account, you know, and it was – but I learned to just think of different ways. I don't go to jobs – because they're looking for somebody. I go because that's who I want. I target them, and I show them that I'm somebody that they want to hire, and that's just always worked out for me. I may have to show up 10 times, but they get tired of me showing up and hiring me. I did that in the mortgage business.
What do you think are the biggest lessons you've learned from going to prison, your experience in the criminal justice system, the everything you've learned afterwards? Just, you know, the last 20 years of your life have been a lot different. You have two acts. You have before 30 and then after 30. What's your mindset changed into?
Empathy. I did not know I could be so empathetic, like painfully empathetic for people now. It taught me to look at the human beings differently. It taught me not to judge harshly. Everybody has a story. But again, I think a lot of it comes back to empathy. And going to prison stripped me of desires of, I don't want to own a Ferrari. I just don't care about that stuff. I don't need a 10,000 square foot house ever. I just don't want that stuff. I saw how people got caught up by wanting things, stealing, you know, to get those. It just changed how I view life and people. I value people in relationships as opposed to things now. And I know it sounds kind of weird, but I don't know. It taught me to grow up. It gave me wisdom. And it probably taught me how to love harder, just everybody in general, like genuinely just care about people. I saw so much hurt and pain in prison, and I had a fantastic father, and I met a lot of guys who didn't ever know their dad or had horrible, abusive fathers. You know, I met your dad, great guy. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys don't have that. And I realized how lucky I was. And I realized at the point when I had nothing, when I got to jail, I literally had nothing, because my ex-girlfriend took everything I owned. So I was going out to nothing. And I realized I still had a lot more than a lot of people, you know, because I had this and this, and I had some people that cared about me, and that made me wealthy. I didn't need stuff. And that, I don't know, when I say unencumbered, just I came out with a clean heart and a cleaner mind. And it changed me pretty dramatically.
If there's one thing you could change from the past, is there something, and would you do it?
I mean, outside my crime and that I created victims, that's probably the thing that I live with the most guilt on, but I wouldn't change a single thing. I mean, I got, my childhood could be... When I was 15, my dad was diagnosed with brain cancer, given a year to live. And exactly 1 year later, I'm in the hospital with spinal meningitis. They didn't know if I was going to live. And I'm thinking he's going to die that day because it's the year, you know, I'm a teenager, right? I'm losing my dad today. And I've been there in the hospital week for weeks. I can't walk. My legs don't work for meningitis. And I remember my mom and sister came up to see us. And about 2 hours later, our preacher came in and said, hey, I got something to tell you. Your house just burned down, while we were all at the hospital seeing me. And I got released the next day to go home after like 4 weeks in the hospital. We didn't have a home to go to.
Wow.
And so my dad didn't die. He beat cancer. He had four more times. Brain cancer finally got him in 2011. This was 1986, mind you. That's how long he kept living with cancer. And that right there taught me that's the worst day of my life, because the hot water heater blew out, destroyed our house. And my mom and little sister had stayed home. They'd be gone. And I was already thinking I'm losing my dad to brain cancer. And then my life was touch and go with meningitis. And I realized I'll never have a bad day again. To this day, I don't have a bad day, because there could be nothing worse than that one day, January 5th, 1987. I almost lost my family. You know, now I still don't have family now, but that pain of that, oh man, it makes me fearless. So I wouldn't change really anything, because I wouldn't be the man I am today. I don't believe in living with regrets.
I love that. GW, thank you so much, man, for coming on the show today.
Thank you. I feel good. I like this
stuff. Those are good, right?
Yeah, I actually like that.
Yeah, I'll give you another one for the road.
Heck yeah.
This was so fun, man.
Thanks,
like,
Ian.
You know, when you walked in here, you could just tell the energy on someone, you know? You're just like, I don't know, there's something about you, you know? Like, you give off that good vibe, and it was a good dynamic, and I think this episode's going to do really well and get your story out, and hopefully it helps your platform and what you have going on.